This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you, Baroness Hannan. And if you could perhaps have some questions for the Minister before we move on to the other speakers. I think everybody's a bit shy. if we take them in threes, one here, Gifty, and then anyone else? No.
Okay. Patricia Coleman. I'm here representing Derby Hospitals Foundation Trust, but my background is long-time local government and now non-exec roles in health and criminal justice. So the aspirations of localism are absolutely music to one's ears, and indeed in local government, something that I was trying to pursue for at least 2 decades, possibly more. But it's very difficult. And you did refer to the issue of central government and you know, it not just being change at local level, it needing to be central as well. But, you know, just from my non-exec perspective now, what really gets in the way is the interests of other departments and agencies. So the criminal justice focus is not necessarily on the joining up at local level. Monitor is not at all interested in this. They just want the books to be balanced. So what we're talking about is a whole system change. And I'm not absolutely convinced that central government sees it as a whole systems change rather than something that is just about what happens at local level. I just wonder if you could comment on that.
The short answer is yes, the government does see it as a whole systems change. I mean, actually, in a year, I think we have demonstrated that we don't want to keep things at the centre. It probably takes a little bit longer than one would like to get that changed. The point that you make was the one I think I was trying to make, that for years you couldn't do anything because nobody else would, everybody's siloed and said this is entirely our job. The whole purpose of community budgets, for example, will be that any agency who's involved will come together. Troubled families, the Ministry of Justice is going to have to be involved. It's absolutely central to what we're trying to do, because families who are in difficulties are always coming to people's attention, have multiple problems usually, which need to be resolved by what we have said in the past, individuals. Actually, that's not at all the truth. It doesn't need that. It needs people to say, we can do that, we can do that. The police need to be involved there. They'll tell us who that family is. That the children are out of making trouble all the time, that the mother's on drugs, there's alcohol. There are so many factors. But we want to see that being dealt with at the most local level. And the aspiration is actually that families will tell you or tell us, you, local government, actually what they need, and then you will be able to move across all public bodies to help them. It's not going to happen overnight. I mean, you know, we got pilots going precisely to tell us where the difficulties will be. But we'll get there, and we'll get there as quickly as we can.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Baroness Hannan. It's Gifty Adela. It's fantastic to see you here. Two things. Firstly, on the community assets, as we understand from the way the bill has been drafted, we're not looking at just the public sector assets, but we're looking much more broadly. So you're looking at the church buildings, the pubs, the privately owned community centres, and that seems quite a mammoth task, and also it's almost an invasion of the private rights of those owners. And I think that's something that we'll need to grapple with, how we communicate to those private owners that their assets will need to be part of the broader register within the community. So I'd be interested in your comments on how you think those private owners are going to embrace those challenges. But secondly, welcoming the freedoms and the flexibilities within the bill, which, as you quite rightly said, will remove a lot of the constraints. But with those opportunities comes responsibilities around governance. And I've had the pleasure of working with you on standards committees. And it's great that you have local government background as a previous leader. But in the absence of a clearly defined ethical framework, I am thinking that the flexibilities that's been provided around the code of conduct is far too loose. Many local governments are still looking to retain some kind of voluntary code, some kind of voluntary committee. Why did government go to that extreme of loosening the chain so much? Bear in mind that it has served local government very well and that we have a disciplined local government because of the code of conduct.
So we deal with the community assets first. We've made huge changes on community assets as the bill has gone through the House. The way it will work is, and it's probably almost more relevant to rural than urban areas. But the way it will work is that if, for example, there's the last pub in the village, or there's the last shop, and local people feel a very great need to protect that or preserve it. Rather than what's happening at the moment, which is a bit of a mishmash of people coming together, I mean, some local areas have been able to do this. A village has banded together to buy the pub. Instead of it having to be sort of last minute, what we are suggesting is that a community group or a neighbourhood group can identify an asset, and you're quite right, it can be something provided by a private owner, which they would, if it came up for sale, but only if it came up for sale, they would be able to have a short period in which they could say, we are interested in buying that and finding out whether they can get the finance. I mean, one of the concerns has been, and I think we have now resolved it, is that this would potentially put a block on somebody who wanted to sell a small piece of land in a big estate, holding up the whole thing. But I think we've got it down now to a timescale of just over a year at the most, and that will mean that anyone who's doing a sale is not going to be really pushed out of the way. It's only, I think, formalising what already has happened in areas. But the private aspect, I mean, the area that people keep on talking about is the playing field, which has been donated by or given for a peppercorn rent by a landowner. The local community want that. Well, they're not going to be able to do that. They'll be able to list it, but they're not going to be able to do it because it's part of a big estate. They can't just take a small chunk out of it. It will, of course, also potentially have an effect on the public sector. But again, it's exactly the same thing. The asset would have to be listed, and the public sector or whoever would then be needing to sell it before there was this bit at all. So I think it's now, we have made changes. I think it is now better realised and understood what we're going to do. There's always been a concern this was going to be a huge burden on local government. Actually, I don't believe it will, because I think the number of assets people will want to list in reality are quite small. I mean, if you're a community group and you've got to raise £500,000, that's one thing. But if you're going to have to try and raise £3 million, that's quite an entirely different matter. So I think that's how that will work. The second aspect is standards. I committed myself at the last stage of committee to talking further about this, because there were great concerns that it was loosening up everything too much. At the moment, the standards boards and the whole regime will go. But the bill is quite specific about the fact that if people have voluntary codes, and they've got to have some structure to be able to support that. We are looking again to see whether that ought to be a mandatory requirement, and that we will have decided before next couple of weeks. We will take that on board, and potentially whether I don't think we will want to dictate a structure around it, but the bill does give the options and what must be done if there's a voluntary code. So I think it's a question of watching this space and to see where we so we finally end up. And I hope you're enjoying yourself. Long time friends.
Okay, any final questions before Baroness has to slip off? Just one last one. We could keep it brief.
Thank you. Councillor Judy Butt from Borough of Poole. I think I'm probably, I don't know if I'm the only councillor here. I feel I'm amongst all the Indians. Portfolio holder for public engagement and participation, and that really is the crux of the matter, public engagement and participation with regard to this localism bill. There's a huge high expectation in Poole amongst the communities, as there are amongst most communities, and that's really the problem. We are trying to prepare for something which we are unsure as to what the outcome is going to be because it's ever-changing and ever-finalising and ever having to be honed, which is fine. That's what statute's all about. But it would be that we are having difficulty in preparing for this bill because there's fiscal constraints as to investments as to how we're going to deliver it in Poole. We're afraid to put that into our medium-term financial plan for this year because, A, we don't have any money. So if we are trying to deem to put it into next year's, we are hoping that the bill is going to assent by April. Is there any word from the House that this is a possibility so we can actually get on and budget for it?
Thank you. I think I said in the course of my remarks that we were hoping to get royal assent before the end of the year. We have only got to get to third reading now in the House of Lords, and that will happen in the next couple of weeks. So we are pushing on for that. So I think you can start planning.
Okay. I think we'll wrap up the questions here for just now. And thank you very much for your time here today and stepping in at the last minute. Thank you, Baroness Hemp.
Thank you.